It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. It is the 28th day of November 2019, Thanksgiving 2019, and this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes with a spiffy new graphic and a link to the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable conversation that will be Thanksgiving on the front porch here presently. Big thanks to Brother Deacon Asa for that. And Brother Deacon Ace has been doing some maintenance work on the website, which is why there has been a problem with the iTunes link. That will be sorted out as soon as iTunes rescans the site. But thank you, Brother Deacon Ace, for all of that. I am thankful. We are all thankful for all the effort that Brother Deacon Ace puts into our online presence. Thank you so very much. And here it is, you know, here it is Thanksgiving evening. Some of us are probably half out of our mind on tryptophan at this point, or pumpkin pie, or mashed potatoes, or green bean casserole, or, you know, whatever it is that makes Thanksgiving Thanksgiving at your house. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's not going to be Thanksgiving at our house until Saturday evening, because I wanted to make sure that I was here to do this. And after a big dose of turkey, well, no, I'll be moving toward catatonic on Saturday instead of today. And just as I suspected, there is an abundance of stuff to talk about even on Thanksgiving. Oh yes, oh yes. But before we do anything else, well, this program, like every other program on the Horn, begins with gratitude. And so thanks go out this evening to Sharon and to Philip and to Randy in PA and to Charlene in Rogues Island, our subscribers for the 28th day of the month. And many thanks to all of our subscribers and everyone who contributes on an a la carte basis for the fact that we've been able to have four so far, counting this evening, what we hope will wind up being a full week of fundraising-free radio like we have at the end of every month. So thank you. Thank you very sincerely and very kindly. Now, as to that Thanksgiving on the front porch I mentioned, we'll get that kicked off in fairly short order. And if you'd like to participate, well, the standard rules apply. Run over to headon.live and click the link at the top of the page. It features a graphic of a turkey and a picture of me with a chef's hat on that I didn't even know I had. Amazing. Wide and many are the wonders of the interweb tubes. Again, thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. if you absolutely cannot manage the link to Skype, well, you are welcome to participate on the stress line. That's out there, and it's toll-free, of course, 844-843-4673. 7-6. So we'll bring the whole gang together that way. Lady B starts us out with a note. Hope your Thanksgiving is going well. When last we checked with Lady B, she was working on a massive, big family Thanksgiving dinner. I hope yours has gone fantastically as well. Of course, I guess what, it's a little past 4 o'clock out there. I'll try not to do too many stories that ruin dinner this evening. That's my Thanksgiving gift to the community. You know, usually we ruin dinner in at least a couple of time zones and some later ones for people who podcast and maybe listen at breakfast or the next day or something. I'll try not to do that. It seems only the right thing. But Lady V writes, hope your Thanksgiving is going well. Listening to NPR while finishing up the last of cooking, they said presidential candidates are spending time in Iowa visiting families and having Thanksgiving with them. Why? No, don't tell me why. Tell me why. Does it make sense that a regular American family would take delight in having a press crew and hired security surrounding your house for a photo op with people who have no chance in hell of winning? I mean, I just don't. I don't know. Is this shit normal? I mean, I suppose for some, the allure of saying, I had Kamala Harris eat at my dining room table, is a draw. But to what end? Let her take the day off. The election's a fucking year away. Oh, but Lady B, Iowa. Iowa, the vaunted Iowa caucus, in which mostly white folks from the heartland determine who will be the front runner. Why, that, well, that's just about a little more than two months away, or thereabouts. And so the time it is running out. And so, yeah, no. You see what I mean? It's not a year away. Lady B continues and says, we don't take our democracy seriously enough. We think our American society is just a television show that's going to win a lot of Emmys because it's interesting and the storyline is compelling. I can't believe we're not calling this bullshit for what it is. Our very lifestyle is on the verge of changing forever. Forget Iowa Dems. They recognize your bullshit and they'll kiss your ass for clicks and cash. But they'll still vote against their and everyone else's best interests because fuck the world, Jesus is coming. It's the American goddamned way. Yeah, all too sadly, truly, it is. And a lot of this has to do with the fact, as I've noted in the past, that in a capitalist system, you wind up with capitalist elections, too. It doesn't have to be that way, but that's the way it is here in this uniquely American situation. So since we have a 24-hour news cycle, we have to have 24-hour content production. And so, yes, some family gets selected by a political candidate's advance team to host a Thanksgiving dinner. And the press crew and the camera people and all the various campaign functionaries stand around just off, just out of sight on the screen, and pretend that it's normal. We shouldn't be surprised by this. Ultimately, it is American politics in the penultimate year of the second decade of the 21st century as reality television. Real candidates of Iowa. I mean, the fact that all these cable news networks, they got ads.
Well, they got to make money somehow, Bob.
But Lady B is correct. Nitwit Nero showed up in Afghanistan today. Imagine that. One of his first, well, I think it was his first trip to Afghanistan. And, of course, he can't help himself. It is that he doesn't want to. And so he turns everywhere he goes into some filthy political charade. And today was no different. He had to make sure he knew how far they'd flown. 8,331 miles. Oh, hell, let's get this over with.
The mashed potatoes, I made a mistake. But I hope everyone enjoyed the fantastic meal. It certainly did look good, and hopefully everyone can get some well-deserved rest this holiday. Your family.
Notice that it looked good. He can't say that it tasted good because he's consumed by paranoia that somebody is going to poison him. It looked good. This, meanwhile, is right up there with, oh, do you remember back during the Reign of Error? You remember George W. Bush and the plastic turkey? Sure.
They're home and they love you so much. We flew 8,331 miles to be here tonight for one simple reason, to tell you in person that this Thanksgiving is a special Thanksgiving. We're doing so well. Our country is the strongest economically it's ever been. We have never done so well. We have the greatest economy anywhere in the world. So it's nice to know that you're fighting for something that is doing well as opposed to something that was not doing well just a number of years ago.
Huh. Wonder how many people there who are serving another tour or a third tour or a fourth tour. Remember, Eddie Gallagher, the war criminal who got more or less pardoned by Nitwit Nero, he had served 8 tours. So I imagine there are no small number of people there who were there back before the God Emperor ever became God Emperor. And probably actually knows the country was doing well, and that some of them probably even know that where we are now is an extension of policies that were put in place after the Great Recession in order to get us to this place. So that we could be in this place to the extent that it's good, even with a complete imbecile at the helm.
Our stock markets reached the highest level ever in the history.
Stock rocket.
Of the exchanges, all three. If you look, all three. It's incredible. It's incredible what's happening. It just broke a record. I think it's...
No, it didn't, but he's lying again, but he does that. He's freestyling right now.
Close to 130 days, so we're less than 3 years, and 130 times we've broken the all-time record. And to me, that doesn't mean an all-time record. It means something different. It means jobs. It means 401ks. People come up to me with their 401ks. They say, sir, you've made me look like a genius. Thank you.
They say, sir, which means that I'm completely, totally making all this up because I'm a liar. They say, sir. Sir, sir. And hey, thank you very kindly. Steve in New York, who isn't in New York, and he says hello and happy Thanksgiving from Roswell, Georgia, en route to Canton, Georgia. I know where both are. Enjoy your time down there. I have a feeling that it might be maybe a little teeny, tiny bit warmer than what it was on the streets of New York. Is there anything, and by the way, speaking of streets of New York, is there any Is there anything in broadcast more inane than the coverage of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade? MSNBC had real live, no kidding, reporters who do real live, no kidding journalism sometimes, wandering the streets, sticking a microphone in people's faces and saying, which balloon are you excited about? Because that was the big story today, that the balloons were going to fly. They were just going to be held very close to the ground so that the wind gusts, through the great glass and concrete canyons of Manhattan, you know the deal. I'm waiting for Snoopy, astronaut Snoopy. Apparently that was the talking point this morning. Although I think it was Willard Scott. Not Willard Scott. But anyway, one of the individuals said, I still miss the Bullwinkle balloon, but you're probably too young to even know who Bullwinkle is. Ooh, that was a little bit uncomfortable. But all those jobs that Nitwit Nero was talking about, Jim says, Trump's hegira? Bad theater, Bob. Well, it can't. Jim noting he just sounds retarded. And I think the official medical term for that now, we had that discussion some weeks back. He sounds intellectually disabled. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon says, I pray to the bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky spook that when Trump's finally ready for that massive brain aneurysm, he's in the midst of talking about the greatest economy of all time. Oh, God. And he said he's back in peace talks with the Taliban, I guess because... Now that he's done, you know, the Ukraine shakedown and the Gallagher thing, it really doesn't matter if he shits on the military or shits on the country, because he knows that there's a body of representatives in the House and a body of senators in the Senate, and somewhere in the 30s-ish of the American electorate that'll say, you okay, cool, you want to shoot somebody? You want to shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue? We'll say, okay, cool about that, too. Can you imagine the coverage if that were to happen? Oh, ma'am, what did you think about him shooting someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue today?
Well, you know, I just wish they'd stop talking about him like that, shooting somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue. If somebody got shot in the middle of Fifth Avenue and Donald Trump had to do it, you know what? It had to be done. He done it because he had to do it. Because he understood that he had to shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue so that America could keep on being great after he done made us great again so that we could cog.
And it would be all over the place. Well, I don't think it's you. Steve, not in New York, says, is it me, or is the ever-increasing weirdness getting almost impossible to listen to? It's getting pretty overwhelming. And by the way, it just occurred to me that we've actually got two members of the fraternity of Steve within probably less than 150 miles of each other. Steve in New York, not far from... Steve from Georgistan, all around great guy, and chat room midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator. How about that? But of course, for this day of the year, there's always the discussion of what are you thankful for? And quite often that is, couched in terms of some sort of religious observance, but it doesn't have to be. the non-religious, the unchurched, can also know and express gratitude. So, for instance, something that we decent people can be grateful for is the apparent courage of former Maryland governor and former 2016 Democratic presidential candidate, Martin O'Malley. On the night before Thanksgiving, down near Union Station in Washington, D.C., there's a pub. Been there a couple of times. It is attached to the Phoenix Hotel. And the Phoenix Hotel markets, it's an expensive-ish place. I've been put up there a couple of times for a couple of events that I've attended. It's an expensive-ish place, and it has a bar and restaurant attached to it called the Dubliner. And over the years, it has become a bit of a tradition for graduates of Gonzaga Jesuit High School in the area to get together and throw back a few at the Dubliner on Thanksgiving Eve. Well, former governor and former 2016 Democratic presidential candidate Martin O'Malley is, in fact, an alumnus of Gonzaga High School. So, too, is the present head of immigration, principal deputy director of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, Ken the Cooch Cuccinelli. At one point in time, he was also the Attorney General of the Commonwealth, the Old Dominion of Virginia. Suffice to say that Ken the Cooch Cuccinelli is a Republican, and not just a Republican. He's one of those particularly virulently toxic ones. And so, lo and behold, Martin O'Malley saw Ken the Cooch Cuccinelli at the Dubliner, and according to a report in the Washington Post, approached him and gave him down the road. Martin O'Malley said, all of us let him know how we felt about him putting refugee immigrant kids in cages. It's certainly not what we were taught by the Jesuits at Gonzaga. And he referred to Ken the Cooch Cuccinelli as the son of immigrant grandparents who cages children for a fascist president. It's pretty strong stuff. And he didn't just say it into a TV camera. He said it to the face of the scumbag in question. So on this Thanksgiving, I'm thankful that there are still people out there with the courage to confront people directly about the evil that they do in the name of Donald J. Trump. And is there a happy ending to this? Yeah, there is. He walked up to Cuccinelli, told him what he thought of him, and Cuccinelli's only response was, well, I just got here, and now it's time to leave. And, well, he pulled a Romulan, and all the rest of the room saw of him was asshole and elbows. Sean Houghton Arnold tweeted, Martin O'Malley just drove Ken Cuccinelli out of the Dubliner in D.C. with a passion-laced and shame-invoking tirade on behalf of immigrant refugee children. Good for him. Good for him.
Of course, we know what the upshot of this will be. It'll be all over the news for the remainder of the news cycle, and they'll talk about civility in America, and we have to be able to put aside our differences and stand in an Irish bar and get shit-faced wasted on Jameson's and Bushmills and Redbreast and good Irish whiskeys and because America. Bullshit. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the maggots will descend upon the Dubliner. Trust me, Dubliner, you don't want that to happen. You really, really don't. But so, since Martin O'Malley referred to Nitwit Nero as a fascist, this little story I ran across at Common Dreams seems to have some relevance. One of the best civil liberties lawyers in the United States is a fellow by the name of Bert Newborn, N-E-U-B-O-R-N-E. And he has a new book out. It's called When at Times the Mob is Swayed, A Citizen's Guide to Defending Our Republic. How about that? Bert Newborn doesn't call it our democracy. Wonder why? Well, mainly because it isn't one. But it's a detailed analysis, this book is, of how, in this case, populist right-wing nationalism can transform a country for the worse and what people can do about it. And, of course, he does it with an eye cast back at history. And I'll bet you know which history it is he casts his eye back toward. So out of that, a list. 20 points of comparison between early Adolf Hitler and Donald Trump. One. Neither one was put in office by a majority of the people. We know that Donald Trump lost the presidency, the popular vote, by almost 3 million votes. Well, that closely aligns with Hitler's election. Turnout in Weimar Germany, he notes, averaged just over 80% of eligible voters. But Hitler, elected by a minority, well, once installed as a minority chancellor in January 1933, Hitler set about demonizing his political opponents, and no one, not the vaunted, intellectually brilliant German judiciary, not the respected, well-trained German police, not the revered, aristocratic German military, not the widely admired, efficient German government bureaucracy, not the wealthy, immensely powerful leaders of German industry, and not the powerful center-right political leaders of the Reichstag, mounted a serious effort to stop him. Two, both had unique means of communicating directly to their bases with Nitwit Nero. It's Twitter. With Hitler, the Nazi Party gave away free radios, which was a big damn deal in the 1930s. But the radios would receive only one channel, and that was the Nazi Party channel. And so if you wanted to, if you were a fan, well, you listened. But here's the problem. If you were a journalist or you wanted to know what they were doing, you had to listen too. That's how we got to this point where little boxes of words from Twitter wind up being chironed onto the screen on news programs all around this country. Lawyer Newborn says, Donald Trump's tweets, often delivered between midnight and dawn, are the 21st century's technological embodiment of Hitler's free plastic radios. Trump's Twitter account, like Hitler's radios, enables a charismatic leader to establish and maintain a personal, unfiltered line of communication with an adoring political base of about 30 to 40% of the population. Many, but not all of whom, are only too willing, even anxious, to swallow Trump's witch's brew of falsehoods, half-truths, personal invective, threats, xenophobia, national security scares, religious bigotry, white racism, exploitation of economic insecurity, and a never-ending search for scapegoats. 3, both blame others and divide on racial lines. Hitler used his single-frequency radios to wax hysterical to his adoring base about his pathological racial and religious fantasies, glorifying Aryans and demonizing Jews. 4, both relentlessly demonize opponents. Hitler's radio harangues demonized his domestic political opponents, calling them parasites, criminals, cockroaches, and various categories of leftist scum. Trump's tweets and speeches similarly demonize his political opponents, talking about the country being infested with dangerous aliens of color. Fantasizes about jailing Hillary Clinton, calls Mexicans rapists, refers to shithole countries, degrades anyone who disagrees with him, and dreams of uprooting thousands of allegedly disloyal bureaucrats in the State Department, etc. 5, they unceasingly attack objective truth. Each began the assault on objective truth by seeking to delegitimize the mainstream press. Hitler quickly coined the epithet Lügenpresse, the lying press, which Trump has transformed into fake news. And 6, they relentlessly attack mainstream media. 7, their attacks on truth include science. Both Trump and Hitler intensified their assault on objective truth by deriding scientific experts, especially academics who questioned Hitler's view on race or Trump's views on climate change, immigration, or economics. 8, their lies blur reality. 9, both orchestrated mass rallies to show status. 10, they embrace extreme nationalism. 11, both made closing the borders a centerpiece. 12, they embraced mass detention and deportations. 13, both used borders to protect selected industries. Like Hitler, Trump aggressively uses our nation's political and economic power to favor selected American corporate interests at the expense of foreign competitors and the environment. 14, they cemented their rule by enriching elites. 15, Hitler reached out to German industry, and Trump has engaged in massive empowerment of corporate America as well. Hitler hated the German labor movement. Trump has a long-standing disdain for unions. 15, both rejected international norms. Y'all can fill in the blanks there. 16, they attacked domestic democratic processes. Hitler purged the voter rolls. Challenged the integrity of the electoral process. Meanwhile, Trump has done exactly the same. 17, both attacked the judiciary and rule of law. Mexican judge.
Both glorify 18. Both glorify the military and demand loyalty oaths. He got rid of James Comey because he wouldn't sign one. 19. They proclaim unchecked power. Both relegate women to subordinate roles. That's rather disturbing. And speaking of Hitlerian tactics, the ICE thugs have made 90 more arrests based upon a fake, false, fraudulent university that they set up in Michigan. Since January, about 250 students have been arrested on immigration violations. They enticed, ICE and other federal agencies did, enticed foreign-born students, most of them from India, to attend a school that marketed itself as offering graduate programs in technology and computer studies. Thing is, the students have arrived here legally on student visas. But when they signed up for the University of Farmington, they lost their immigration status once it was shut down. And the whole thing was staffed with undercover agents posing as university officials. Your tax dollars at work. Damn. This holiday season has seen ICE thugs trying to surreptitiously make their way into homeless shelters so that they could find undocumented immigrants to torment there. You know, in a way, I didn't even need to read that list of 20 things that Hitler and Trump had in common. It's right there in our faces every day. Yep. Oh, and speaking of taxpayer dollars, this. You know, when you talk to a maggot, sometimes they'll say to you, well, hell, he don't even accept pay for making America great again. He doesn't accept his salary. That's how rich Donald Trump is. Oops. Some numbers have been put together. Since he has been the occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Chlamydia Claudius has fleeced we the people of the United States working on that more perfect union. Out of $115 million. I know we play this game all the time, but imagine just for a moment if Barack Obama had done a tenth of that. Oh, wait. Every time Barack Obama hit a golf ball while he was president, somebody at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda spontaneously had kittens with crocheted tails. Our country is in economic hard times. How dare that one in our White House, that Kenyan Muslim, how dare he? How dare? Have you no shame, Barack Hussein Obama? Yeah, I remember that well. Well, we're out $115 million, and he's not nowhere near being done. But it's not just that we're out $115 million; it's that that $115 million equals something on the order of 287 years of the presidential salary. So we would be better off if he would just take the salary and not, well, you get the idea. But then there's the next level down. The fact that the money we're spending, in many instances, we're spending straight into his pocket. That's kind of an economic multiplier effect, at least for him. Because he often stays at his own properties, which means that we foot the bill. For instance, down at that vermin-infested pile of bricks, Mara Slezo, according to an investigation by ProPublica, security details and people who travel with the president, their nightly rate for a room was $546. That must be some swanky place. No, it's not. $546 is three times the amount you or I would pay to stay a night at Mara Slezo. $546 a night for 24 Trump administration officials who stayed there during a visit by Chinese President Xi Jinping. By the way, the Chinese paid Donald Trump to stay in that sleazy dive. White House staff left a bar tab of some $1,006.60 for 54 top shelf cocktails. And just in case you're wondering, this shits all over the Constitution. As of yesterday, Nitwit Nero has been at a golf course he owns for 223 days out of this miserable presidency. Extrapolating the data, that means that the Secret Service has shelled out around $2.3 million in your money and pumped it directly into Donald Trump's pocket. What a racket. Jordan Leibovitz of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington says it's becoming abundantly clear that Donald Trump uses his presidency as a way to put money into his pocket. The issue isn't that he likes golf. The issue is that he has spent a huge amount of his presidency making promotional appearances at his struggling golf courses and leaving taxpayers to foot the bill. And yes, it was 2011, December, when Trump, then just a reality television sleazebag, said, "I play golf to relax. My company is in great shape. Barack Obama plays golf to escape work while America goes down the drain." And then there was 2016, February, when he said, "I love golf." And this is before the election. "I love golf. But if I were in the White House, I don't think I'd ever see Turnberry again. I don't think I'd ever see Doral again. I don't ever think I'd see anything. I just want to stay in the White House and work my ass off."
It's pretty clear he hasn't worked any of that off. He golfs 2.5 times as often as Barack Obama did. And, of course, Barack Obama played his golf on courses that were maintained by the military. So Barack Obama did not make money off of his own golfing trips. It's about $3.4 million a trip for Nitwit Nero to go to Mar-a-Lago. A whole bunch of that's the cost of Air Force One and the attendant cargo plane entourage. And he's there now. Yeah. And in fact, when Stephanie Grisham was asked, did she know how many people were in the entourage this time or how much it was costing, the official White House spokescreep said no. That's all, just no. He's not rich. But here's the damnedest thing. Presidents often wind up, when they're ex-presidents, being better off financially than they were going in. Speaking fees, or maybe if you're George H.W. Bush, getting paid to go and puke on the Prime Minister of Japan. Sure. Because the wealth class is willing to pay for the status, the panache, the patina of respectability that comes with having hobnobbed with a former president. It's just sort of how the whole thing works. There is, of course, a precedent for it. Yeah.
Politicians, ugly buildings, and whores all get respectable if they last long enough.
Yeah. I know in particular Jim will have enjoyed that clip. So that's, you know, that's where we find ourselves on this Thanksgiving night, 2019. Hopefully you were able to get through Thanksgiving dinner, or are getting through Thanksgiving dinner, without this stuff coming up at the table. It probably means that you got to enjoy your meal. Oh, and speaking of turkey, the dictator of that nation, Erdogan, has gone after France. Yep, today, Erdogan accused Emmanuel Macron and the French of being a state sponsor of terrorism in the Middle East. Why? Because the French, unlike the United States, have not betrayed their Kurdish allies. And Erdogan says the Kurds are the Kurds are terrorists. Yeah. Not ISIS, the Kurds. This is all because Emmanuel Macron has been pretty boldly outspoken on the Turkish assault on the Kurds. And so, speaking for Erdogan, Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu
was quoted as saying, Macron is sponsoring the terrorist organization. He receives them regularly at the Élysée Palace. Let Macron not forget Turkey is also a member of NATO, that it stands by its allies. Well, whatever. They've got real ambitions toward a Kurdish genocide. Macron said earlier today, I respect the security interests of our Turkish ally, which has suffered numerous attacks on its soil, but you cannot, on the one hand, say we are allies and demand solidarity in that regard, and on the other hand, present your allies with the fait accompli of a military operation that endangers the actions of the anti-IS coalition, of which NATO is a member. Ouch. See, dictators don't like being spoken to like that. If a citizen of the dictator's own country speaks like that, well, that citizen can be conveniently disappeared. But when world leaders speak in such fashion, well, it makes for an unhappy little tyrant. Yeah. And then there's something that happened over on MSNBC this afternoon. It's kind of an extension of what happened on Morning Joe the other day when Anand Giridharadas schooled Bret Stephens. Well, somebody booked Michael Strain, who is a supposed scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, a right-wing think tank, to have a conversation with Ali Velshi. And there was no Anand Giridharadas there to straighten up Michael Strain. Remember, this is a message on Thanksgiving. It's kind of gross.
American billionaires with a wealth tax. Bernie Sanders is taking things a step further. He says billionaires shouldn't exist at all. But my next guest argues these progressive candidates are moving in the wrong direction. He says he's thankful for the existence of billionaire innovators. Joining me now, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, Michael Strain. Michael, we're going to have some fun today, you and me. I'm reading your article, and you say you're thankful for billionaire investors. You saved yourself with one word there, billionaire innovators is what you said. Because the innovators you cite, Bill Gates, Larry Ellison, Larry Page, Sergey Brin, the world's not as mad with them as they are with billionaires who don't seem to have returned something to the economy because they've invented fascinating things that we use every day. They're a whole bunch of billionaires who are not innovators.
There are a bunch of billionaires who are not innovators. I agree with that. And I agree that there is a hierarchy of concern about billionaires, but it is now common, Ali, as you know, to hear people on the left, including elected officials, say things like every billionaire is a policy mistake, we shouldn't have billionaires. And so you're right, I focused on perhaps the least objectionable group of billionaires as far as the political left is concerned. But I think that if you look at the list of billionaires, they're all doing stuff to contribute to the economy. It's not just Jeff Bezoses of the world that are making enormous contributions. And rather than say that
enormous contributions. By the way, have you noticed all the Amazon ads lately? Warm, fuzzy ads to make you feel good about Amazon. They're not selling any particular items. They're featuring people who work in Amazon warehouses talking about how trans-friendly Amazon is. And how they're going to pay me to go to college so I can leave Amazon. How crazy is that? Well, when you see these sorts of things, we need to be cognizant that companies don't run these ads unless there's a need to. And the need at Amazon is the fact that they have a massively higher average injury rate, compensable injury rate, than other businesses. The numbers, the statistics are breathtaking. I mean, we're talking about people whose lives have been altered forever. Lady B made reference to this a few nights back. Back in 2018, Amazon raised its minimum wage to $15. But over at The Guardian, they've done an investigation. And workers are being punished for injuries. Bonuses and stock options being eliminated. The people who work in the massive warehouses in states like California have insane performance statistic requirements. One case of an Amazon fulfillment center in Robbinsville, New Jersey, and Jade Velez. And she described to The Guardian a 10-hour night shift in July 2019 when she injured her shoulder. She said, I had many heavy items that entire work shift. And eventually, she left work early to go get it attended to. She said the pain was unbearable. Her arm swelled. She showed up at the next shift and requested to be sent to AmCare, which is the Amazon on-site first aid clinic. Kind of like how the coal companies had the coal company doctors 100 years ago. AmCare told her to put some ice on it, gave her some ibuprofen, told her to get back to work. She tried to work. She couldn't. She went back to AmCare. They sent her home. Then they called her in for a mandatory overtime shift. Mandatory. She had no right to withhold her labor because, of course, she is one woman against a multi-billion-dollar corporation. She has no union. Then she filed a workers' compensation claim, and with no fuss, on July the 8th, they told her, nope, it's been denied. Sorry. She told The Guardian, I've sustained an injury on their time at their facility during their work, and now I'm being faulted for it as I am only liable. To date, I have yet to see a doctor since I was awaiting direction from Sedgwick and still in pain and unable to fully utilize the weight of my shoulder. Meanwhile, in the warm, fuzzy, smiley Amazon ad, you've got a guy who says, hey, I got it. I'd never had health care before in my life, and Amazon gave it to me right out of the gate. How cool is that? And, of course, if Amazon comes to your state, you can make sure, you can be certain that they'll have a nice, friendly conversation with your state's workers' compensation authority. Devon Fisher was a picker at an Amazon fulfillment center in San Marcos, Texas. He quit after 2 years.
He said, hitting the rate got harder and harder. So I gave up and quit. My body would hurt 24/7, and I couldn't take it anymore. The last 3 months, a computer would decide whether to give me a write-up or not. A computer shouldn't get to do that. Or maybe it's an Amazon worker working in Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, the deep South, the sunny South, the fucking hot South. In a warehouse that has no air conditioning. And there's another facility in the Charlotte area, similar. One worker said, "We've all complained we need more fans. One day I almost had a heat stroke. I've tried telling them they need to do something. They keep saying they don't have enough money to get more fans throughout the warehouse." Dig it. Amazon doesn't have enough money to make sure their workers don't fucking heat stroke. And the stories go on and on and on. So maybe just take note that when you see that warm, fuzzy little Amazon ad, there's a reason. Yeah, they're spent. Amazon's spending money on the PR ads that they're not spending on ventilation and air conditioning in a blazing hot the group of warehouses. Let that sink in. Jim noting Amazon's labor practices are reputedly brutal and medieval. Horrible. Well, it is. You know what would change all that? A union. Or three. But, of course, there. And then, anybody familiar with Big Lots? I saw a photograph earlier. They're running a union-busting organization, operation, I should say, in West Virginia. Passing out flyers. Big Lots, proud to be union-free. Things you need to know. You have the right to refuse to sign a union authorization card, not to support a union, and to oppose unionization. Union members account for a very small percentage of the workforce, according to the Center for Union Facts, which is, of course, a front group put up by anti-union businesses. 82% of non-unionized workers do not want their jobs to be unionized. Yeah, they were asked, but you know how they got that number. Unions are expensive for associates. Associates pay an initiation fee and monthly dues. They may also pay assessments to cover things like strike funds, legal fees, or building expenses. Yeah, you know what they also do? They step in when their brothers and sisters are wounded. You know, let's not use that. That's such a pretty word, injured. When they are wounded in the service of capitalism. And they make a difference in people's lives and save lives. Yeah, I saw this the other day, and I said, well, I don't need to be in Big Lots. Mm-mm. This would be a vastly different country if it was vastly more pro-union. Hey, let's run over to the old holler tree and check in with Sparky. Remember, if you can't make Skype work, well, you can get in via the stress line, 844-843-4676. Happy Thanksgiving, Sparky.
What's going on?
Oh, yeah, there is a war on Thanksgiving. Doggone it, I missed it.
No, I haven't even started doing anything yet.
Dinner-wise?
Yeah, we got a half turkey breast to cook. And we're waiting on some rolls to rise that are sitting over the fireplace.
Do y'all have Schwann's trucks out that way?
Yeah.
I don't know if they've still got them. I haven't bought anything off a Schwann's truck in a long time. But they used to.
I have. They're not any good anymore.
Really?
We used to use them like, back in the 90s.
Well, we used to get these frozen sourdough rolls that were fan-damn-tastic. You mentioning rolls is what put it in my mind.
Oh, we just bought this bag of yeast rolls or whatever a long time ago, and they've been in the freezer. So she got them ready last night, and then this morning I put them above the fireplace insert is.
So I saw some story about Thanksgiving travel woes, and I saw a quote from a woman who said it took us 17 hours to get to Redding, California. Nasty stuff up in the mountains around there?
Yeah, I would think so. We had sleet last night.
Oh, that's always fun.
It didn't last long. But I imagine there's a lot of snow up in the mountains now.
Well, some of this is putting paid to fire season, isn't it?
Oh, fire season's over now. As soon as the first rain comes, they say it's over. It increases the moisture and the humidity and everything else.
How much rain does it take to soak things well enough that that the areas aren't a tinderbox anymore?
Oh, well, it just takes one good storm here. I mean, the ground is pretty
well
soaked. Grady was even out there digging gophers today because the ground is softer now since it rained. You can't dig them when it's hard as a rock.
No, I'm sure he's making the best of it.
But he's not feeling real good right now. He went out running nuts, and I think he messed up one of his legs.
Oh.
Made a quick stop. Instead of hitting the sliding glass door, he ran up the steps and he did something.
Oh, he's poor fella.
Favoring it.
Is he just hanging out for the moment, maybe laying down and chilling?
He was, but he got up and he's looking at me like, can you do something? You know, we have these puncture vines out in the back.
Yeah.
They grow in certain areas and he'll get them in his foot. And he'll come hobbling over into the man cave and I'll lift up his foot and pull him out. And he's good to go. But we were out there today. I had the propane heater going so I could get some storm damage cut up. Limbs always come down off of trees and stuff, especially the redwood tree.
Did it shed some?
Yeah, it sheds. They shed really bad anyway.
You know,
the using stuff.
Did you watch the NFL today?
I'm watching the game right now.
Oh, okay. I didn't even realize it was
right in front of my face. Got it on a tab on the computer.
Dallas and who?
Buffalo. Buffalo's ahead 23-7.
Yeah, I saw earlier this week that Jerry Jones had served notice on Dallas's head coach. Where's John Brittavo when we need him?
He's going to be doing his own thing today, from what I heard.
Well.
Anyway, Buffalo's getting ready to kick another field goal. And it's good. So they're now ahead.
Wow. How far in?
There's like 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Oh, that's a bad day at the Jerry Jones at the Jerry Jones Taj Mahal.
Yeah. Especially on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's not supposed to happen that way.
I can't even remember when they first started playing games in Dallas on Thanksgiving.
I don't remember when they didn't. Detroit started the trend.
Yeah, Detroit's been doing it for years and years and years and years. I think even when I was a little kid.
Did they play earlier?
Yeah, Chicago beat them.
Good deal. Oh, I had a note talking about the Amazon story. I had a note from Randy in PA. I have a friend who scored a 96 on his job performance at Amazon and got fired for non-performance. Jesus. I mean, and especially this time of year. I can't imagine what it must be like to work in that situation.
Yeah. Now you make me feel guilty for buying all that stuff on Amazon.
Well, I'm not trying to... No, it's not a matter of guilt. It is a system by design. It's like that Michael Strain, the guy I was playing the clip of earlier a few minutes ago. I didn't even get deep into it. But basically, Michael Strain told Ali Velshi that people who are poor or hungry or both should spend Thanksgiving giving thanks for billionaires. Jesus, I mean, they're not even trying to hide it anymore.
I had to let Grady out.
Is he still limping?
Well, a little bit, but he was bugging the shit out of me, so I figured he had to go out.
Well, he'll walk it off and rub a little dirt on it.
Anyway, I got the car up back Monday afternoon after what?
Was it the alternator?
No, it was just the battery. Deader than a doornail, and it's...
Wouldn't hold a charge.
I asked the guy, it wouldn't charge. He said, it's probably something. I said, is it something to do with the computer stuff? And he says, yeah, there's a lot of stuff on the car that has to see 12 volts for it to run. So anyway, but I had a leak I wanted to check too, and it was on my transmission, so they fixed that for me. Drained the fluid, put in a new filter and a new gasket or something. It was only a couple $100. Because I had the battery for him in the trunk, so all he had to do was put it in. That saved me some time, because putting one of them batteries in is a bastard, as far as I'm concerned. Because you got to go through the wheel well.
Oh, no shit. Really?
Really?
Oh, some engineer needs to be flogged.
Well, this is a 1999 car, so... Nice thing about it is paid for.
So did you get stuck with the core charge and you got your core deposit back and everything with the battery?
No, I just told the car place to get rid of it. They were going to get rid of it for me. I didn't even want to try and deal with Les Schwab.
Go. Oh, understandable.
You don't have Les Schwab's out that way, do you?
No.
Strictly a West Coast thing.
What is it?
It's a tire shop and they sell batteries.
Oh, okay, yeah. Kind of like NTB, National Tire and Battery.
Yeah. And they work on trucks, big truck tires and everything. And they run service trucks up and down the road to fix 18-wheeler flats or that kind of thing.
So, when does the half a turkey breast go on?
Oh,
are you just doing it? Are you doing it in the oven, or are you doing it on the grill?
In a toaster oven. It's only 4:15 here, and it only takes an hour and a half. So,
that's the other thing on Thanksgiving Day. A lot of people eat it, sit down to Thanksgiving dinner 1 o'clock so that everybody's, nice and passed out by 3 and 4, or at least on the way home.
There's just this. So that's not a problem. We spent yesterday afternoon watching The Irishman.
Oh, yeah, you told me don't bother.
Well, unless you want to see a lot of neat old cars. Uh-oh.
Hell of a ringtone there.
I know. I'm getting called by the other end of the house. Hang on, I'll be back.
All right. We'll stand by. I just saw in the chat room where our buddy Roger said, how come the Skype link isn't up at yeah, click, yeah. I just saw somebody wander into the room. Who we got? You need to unmute your mic. Nope. Okay, that didn't last.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, Judy was freaking out. She hadn't seen Grady yet.
Yeah, Roger's in the chat room and says, why isn't the Skype link up on the main horn page? And I told him that it is. There's that cute little graphic that Brother Deacon Asa did. It says, gobble, gobble, click here for yada, yada. Click here for the Skype link.
Yeah, because he gets it early afternoon to put up there. Yeah. Our time. He's 12 and 1, I sent it to him.
And I mean, I'm looking at it on my browser, and it's live and it's clickable, and somebody just came in. Can you unmute them?
No.
Oh, they're gone again.
I can only mute people.
Right.
Mute them and kick them.
Okay, Roger's Roger's trying to get into the conversation.
Well, I'll ring him again. He's probably using that guest thing.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oops. Yeah, there you are. It was.
That wasn't Roger. I thought that sounded more like Gary.
Gary's got his own ID. Now Roger's joined.
There's Roger.
And the other person's in. And now, too.
You there, Roger?
Showing here.
Yeah. And who's the other one that jumped in?
Jug-a-Punch.
Jug-a-Punch. Hey, man.
Thomas.
Yeah.
Long time no hear from.
Yeah, I've been listening to you guys every so often, but it's been a while.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. We had dinner yesterday because, having RNs in the family and all that, and, you know, that requires their presence elsewhere. So, yesterday was Christopher's birthday, so we decided to have dinner yesterday. So it was fine.
Turkey, all the trimmings and stuff?
Yeah. Amy brought over some corn pudding and all that stuff, and so it was all good.
Yeah, like I said, I have to wait until Saturday because things have to go on and off of the acorn smoker.
I finally found one at a good price and broke down and bought one.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I love the thing. To regulate the temperature, you just crank it like down just such a wee smidgen close and keep 220, 225. Sometimes it'll flare up a little bit and you just wind it back down.
Well, I tell you what, the two pieces of advice I've learned over a couple of years with it. One, you know that ash pan at the bottom that snaps off?
Yes.
With those two clips?
Correct.
Be absolutely obsessive compulsive about that thing.
Well, I'm obsessive compulsive about pulling off every time, washing it out, and get all the ash off.
Yeah, you got to do that. And then the other thing is, if you haven't already, go ahead and invest in Char Griller's smoking stone.
Or I do have that. I did buy the smoking stone. So it deflects the heat up along the sides. Yes, I have that.
Yeah, and it keeps if you're like doing a pork butt or ribs or anything, it keeps them from being subjected to direct flame heat, and instead that stone gets nice and hot, and you get a kind of a convection thing going.
Yeah, I did do that from the get-go, so it was worthwhile. It worked out for me real nice. You know, it gets nice and black and all that, but that's okay with me. That's not what its purpose is.
Yeah, but eventually grease will drip onto it.
Yes.
And so you want to make sure that stuff doesn't accumulate because it will catch fire.
Yeah, well, what I do is I found like a $1 or $2 aluminum foil pan that just fits over it, and it kind of catches everything. I put a little bit of water and just catches that. So that's worked out real good for me.
Oh, nice. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I just put that on top of that stone and just 1 or 2 inches of water and don't worry about it.
Did you go ahead and spring for the cover?
Yeah, I do have a cover on it, and it also sits underneath my eave on my deck outside the kitchen, so it doesn't get rained directly on because it's on a east side, north side wall, so the weather comes through and it doesn't hit it directly.
Cool. What all have you done on it so far?
Done a pork butt, ribs. I haven't done a lot this year, you know. We're kind of recovery mode from a year ago last summer when little man was in the children's hospital for over 2 months. So, you know, we're just getting back up to speed. We've been catching up on all the things that went by the wayside a year ago.
Yeah, that definitely does happen. That's the absolute truth. When you did the button, have you brined them and seasoned them in the brine yet?
I never brined anything. I salt them down, let the salt absorb in, and the rubs I do are, I don't have salt in the rubs, and I put a good heavy rub on them, and I then get my smoke on it with the rub.
Well, if you go to your big box home improvement retailer, they've got food-grade plastic buckets. And you get one of those in a lid, and you make a brine with the kosher salt and mm-hmm. any spices that you want to flavor the meat with, put them in the brine, and the osmotic action of the brine will carry that deeper into the meat than a regular rub will.
Yeah, because I know the spices don't penetrate deep, but maybe that would work to carry it through any aromatics into it.
Well, I tell you, I absolutely love that thing.
Yeah,
and maybe by next year when you're finally, you know, when everything's all caught up, next year try brining a turkey this time of year.
Right.
And then get yourself a can of Foster's. You drink half the can of Foster's or pour it out for the gods, whatever. And you prop the turkey up on its legs and on that Foster's can and just let it smoke, you know, do that 200, 225 degree thing and let the hickory pour to it. You will be amazed.
All right. I'm planning on trying it out next year. It's like when it gets cold outside, I don't plan on using the thing. There's no point in me going out in the cold.
I understand. Believe me, I do. I'm a little bit more of a hardcore. I saw a picture I posted last year of the turkey going on the smoker a year ago, and I think that, in fact, that was back when I was smoking turkeys in anticipation of Malloy Fest in the North Georgia Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
They were good. They were really good.
Yeah. Well, let you know, I still listen to you. I don't know how I had the time to listen as much as I did back whenever. I retired, and it's like I don't have time. It's like I'm catching up on stuff around here, and it's like it's nuts. It's like trying to figure out where I'm going to go out Saturday or Sunday, and I come doors, I'm trying to... Well, I already have enough signatures, but their requirements are pitiful. They only require 5 signatures, and in my ward precinct, there are 138 people. And I think 5 is pitiful, so I already have 8, and so I'm thinking either Saturday, I'm thinking maybe Sunday. That way, I don't step on any, run across anybody of a Jewish heritage, I'm not stepping on their toes, knocking on their doors, and collecting signatures on Sunday. I just want to fill up SGE as many names as possible so I can be put on ballot for a ward precinct person.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's just awesome.
So,
keep us apprised of your efforts, man.
Yeah, be sitting on my butt just a little. Into a podcast and not doing anything.
Shh, don't describe it that way.
I mean, well, I'm describing that way because, you got to do more than just listen to that. You know, put some earbuds in your ears and walk around.
Yeah.
Knock on doors and get signatures.
Well, our buddy Dennis down in Kentucky tells me he's now letting somebody else do the mowing, but we mowed grass in Kentucky together over many happy episodes.
Yeah. It's like I have little earbuds. I'll get on my lawnmower and get some. I don't know if you ever seen those magnets you put on metal for holding paper towels.
Oh yeah.
I'll put that on my lawnmower. Put my iPad in that thing so it doesn't flop around and fall and just cue up a podcast and have the earbuds in my ears like go mow the lawn.
Beautiful. That works. I mean, I have to, as humble as I am, I have to say that this has got to be a more engaging noise than the racket of a lawnmower.
Oh, yeah. Well, I actually put hearing muffs over the earbuds, too, to block out the
excessive noise, and you know, just control. You control the volume, you're fine.
But I do have a question. How do I sound coming through? How you're hearing me?
You're pretty good, really.
I'm using a JBL Bluetooth speaker with a microphone, and it's about a foot and a half away from me. I'm out in my garage, and I've used this thing. I've actually used this thing as actually a speaker. I think you're coming through my iPad as far as the speakers, but right now it's just acting as a microphone.
Well, it's solid and there's no echo, so you're doing something. You're doing everything right.
Yeah. So because sounds coming through the iPad and it's not coming through the JBL, so it's not picking up the echo. Because that thing the microphone sitting behind the iPad, where your sound's directed right at me. So I was just wondering if it was working out okay.
Yeah, it sounds magnificent. Well, let's check in with Roger. What's up, Roger?
Roger.
Coming through.
There he is.
Okay, there I am. Everything's kind of, you know, copacetic here. The prime ribs on the rotisserie. And I'm out in the back and sitting here at the computer. The wife just brought me some hors d'oeuvres, and I think that was kind of her way of saying that I should come in the house because maybe the family's already here, but I had to wait to check in. I see the nitwit went to Afghanistan and didn't eat any food.
He was afraid his own troops would poison him. Jesus.
But here in Eugene, I noticed a little bit of ice crystals in the raindrops on the windshield yesterday afternoon. I do know that my friends over in Humboldt County on the coast, just north of Eureka, had power lines down because of the wind, limbs blown out of the trees and trees down across the road, and they got hammered by those 70-mile-an-hour winds, but no problem up here. And I was chatting with Sparky in the chat room, and he said he just got a little bit of sleet, so it must have stayed on the coast.
No, we got a lot of rain, too.
I mean, we had the rain, but we didn't have the wind.
Well, we had the wind, too.
I didn't get the wind.
My flagpole on the man cave, a piece of half-inch EMT, it blew so hard, it bent it over with the flag on it. And all these other winds that during the PG&E shutdown never affected it or anything, and then this swirling storm went out of the south, because most of the winds were out of the north before.
Well, the eye of this storm apparently came ashore between Crescent City and Brookings, Oregon, which is about a 80-90 mile, right at the Oregon-California border.
Well, that place you're probably thinking of is Hilt.
What, on I-5?
Yeah, it's the last place in California before you go over to Oregon.
Okay, and it's up there pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, it's a base of some of the more the Siskiyous there. And you already started climbing the Siskiyous, and it's...
Well, I hadn't driven that in a long time, except when I left your place, I ended up coming home that night. And you know, super dark when I was driving up over. And so I know I went through all those places, but they all kind of looked the same because they were just a little bit, a few lights on the side of the road. Although
that's all he hoped is.
Yeah, but that was right when the power outages were coming down, the PG&E shut off. So I could never tell whether the PG&E shut things off or whether I was out in the middle of nowhere or what the hell was going on. I was just driving on the highway.
You see that picture of that hat I posted?
Yeah. What are the initials?
LOPA.
You know what it stands for?
I do.
No.
Well, I'll let you do it, Dan.
Yeah, Beavis, Eric Trump, posted that, I think, earlier today, pissing and moaning about the impeachment inquiry. It stands for, leave our president alone.
Oh, fuck off.
Wait a minute. Sometimes the Zen simplicity gets a cowbell. Yeah.
Thank you, but, you know, with all that birth certificate bullshit and all the rest of it, I just am consistently pissed off at the hypocrisy. I mean, you brought it up earlier. If Obama had spent $50 million golfing in 8 years, there would have been no end to the bullshit. This asshole spends $112 million in less than 3 years, and nobody says a peep. Oh my God, Hunter Biden was making $50,000 a month being hired to be on the board of directors of a company because he got hired for his expertise in getting rid of corruption, which is what his law firm was doing, or the law firm he worked at. So he gets put on the board with the new president to deal with the corruption of the power company. And all of a sudden, the goddamn right-wingers are saying, well, he was part of the corruption. Biden gets involved in trying to fire the attorney general that isn't doing the corruption investigation that he should be doing to get somebody that will deal with the corruption. And now Biden is being accused of being part of the corruption. I don't understand how people can be so damn stupid.
Makes you want to eat dirt and run rabbits, doesn't it?
Yeah. One of my Facebook friends, high school, you know, from high school. I feel sorry for people that have fallen to man-made climate change hoax. And, you know, I posted a little thing about, come on, until 1850, all that coal and oil that was in the ground used to be CO2 in the atmosphere. We dig it up and we burn it, and we particularly spew it out at 30,000 feet. Where the hell is that carbon supposed to go from when the entire goddamn world was jungle and it got made into coal and oil? And now we're pulling it up out of the ground and burning it. We're just putting ourselves back to what the climate was, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I'm sorry. The Earth's only 6,000 years old. I'm sorry.
Adam and Eve rode to church on the backs of dinosaurs, right?
Yeah, well, if Adam and Eve were the first two, where the hell did – I mean, they had kids, and then where did those kids make kids? I mean, it's got to be incest. Can't be anything else.
Ding, 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 ding.
Or wait a minute. Didn't one of them go off somewhere else and find a woman to fornicate with and make more babies?
Yes, but
– Well, then how come Adam and Eve were the only two around? I just have problems with all that kind of shit. I'm sorry.
I know. It gets a little it can get more than a little bit frustrating. Because you can't square it up. I mean, it reminds me in many ways of this.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs. And the homosexuals.
Amen.
Yeah. But
well, I just wanted to come in.
Well, I'm glad you did. I got to know though. You mentioned hors d'oeuvres earlier. Please, I got it. You can't just say that and walk away. We got to have food. We got to have hors d'oeuvre food porn.
Let's see. One of them was a cracker with some brie on it, and then some green tomato citrus marmalade on top.
Damn.
And then there was a guava jellied number that she buys that gets cut up with some hard cheese underneath it. So it's a mankara cheese. It sort of tastes like Asiago, but it's a little bit drier. And there was a piece of that and then a piece of this guava. I call it jelly, but it's not really a jelly on top of that. And then let's see. There's going to be the charred pastry. Rice, prime rib. What else was she brewing up today? Oh, we made our own eggnog, with rum and brandy. And that's going to be for a little bit later. Dessert is alfajores, which is a, very short bread. It's a sandwich, with, Marro Blanco, which is a caramelized sweetened condensed milk. A shortcake biscuit sandwich made of that, and then dipped in powdered sugar to cover it. She's put on a feast, and we're going to have both the
son of a gun,
the daughter-in-law, and the two grandchildren for just a family feast. No extended family, just immediate family this year. Last year we had my sister, my niece, my cousin. And the, you know, our close family all together, and then the cousin's girlfriend, and I don't know, we had about 15 people last year. This year we're down to 8. Well, let's see, 2, 4, 5 adults and 2 kids. So it's a nice little small gathering.
Sounds absolutely lovely, Roger. I hope you all enjoy it immensely.
Well, on Christmas, we're headed down to Peru for 3 different celebration of life services for her father, who died in June at the age of 95. And he's revered down in Peru for all kinds of good works. He was an engineer basically the Lima, Peru water and sewer system was his baby for years and years and years and years. And 2 or 3 years ago, we went down, got him down there, and they put his picture up on the wall and named a street after him and gave him an honorary PhD at the local university where he taught at and all the rest of it, because all the work he'd done and the research he'd done and his recommendations for the water treatment plant and all the rest of it that they didn't pay attention to when he was doing it 20-odd years ago. They finally realized that he was a smart man, and now they're starting to do it. So they granted him his honorary doctorate and did all that good stuff for him, and now that he's died, they all want to get together and hoist an elbow.
That's lovely.
So we're going down there for that. And then I'm hoping to get a little bit of touristy thing in and go visit Corral, which is the oldest city in the Western Hemisphere. And they found absolutely no evidence of armaments or any war or anything like that.
It's coastal.
Peaceful people.
Yeah, but it's coastal, right?
Yeah, it's about 130 kilometers north of Lima in what is now the desert. But apparently 15,000 years ago, there was a bit more moisture in the atmosphere. And there's a city, and the pyramids are older than the Great Pyramids of Egypt. So it should be an interesting expedition.
Is Peru relatively calm right now?
Yeah, unlike Bolivia. Things are fine in Peru, to the best of my knowledge. I'm not the one that reads a Peruvian newspaper every day. My wife is, but things are calm and cool and collected. Not a problem.
Well, that sounds like a magnificent trip.
It's not my first time down there.
So, and one of the neat things is when you get into the higher altitudes, you know, they've still got a jillion varieties of potato, because, of course, that's where the potato comes from.
I lived in a place called Capa Chica for a year. This is right on Lake Titicaca, real close to Puno. And I lived in a little village with no electricity, no running water, blah, blah, blah. Market came to town on Sundays. And you go to the markets there and there'll be a potato seller and there'll be 50 different varieties of potatoes.
Well, I've seen mention of a soup that they make, and they use naturally freeze dried potatoes.
Well, that's kind of a misnomer, but I know what you're talking about. There's two different varieties. There's chunya and tunta, and I don't like either one of them.
Oh, really?
Are
they skanky?
Well, to me, the process basically is you dig the potatoes and you spread them out in the stone courtyard of your little compound. And you leave them out overnight, and they freeze. And you get up in the morning, and you stomp on them, or stomp on them in the evening, and you break the skins. And then when it freezes at night, when the sun comes out, because of the altitude, it's much easier for the water vapor to go directly from ice to vapor without going through the liquid phase, which is the freeze-drying process. And this goes on for 2 or 3 weeks, and they are a dried potato, and then it has unlimited storage life, and most of them are used in soups or stews kind of thing. And one of the problems is that normally when we boil stuff down here at sea level, we think of boiling point of water as 212 degrees Fahrenheit. But at 12,500 feet, the boiling temperature is at about 185. And so it takes forever to cook. And somehow they just don't seem to get cooked. So you're kind of eating warm, dried, wetted down raw potato.
I was going to say, are they even kind of leathery?
Well, they're gritty. They're leathery. It's an acquired taste. I mean, people who like it really like it.
Well, and the same goes with guinea pig. In Ecuador.
Yeah, cooey is another one that's you got to get used to it. But cooey is more like rabbit. That's not a problem. But if you eat chunya or tunta down in Lima, it has a totally different texture because it's boiled at a higher temperature. And that's the difference between the stuff in the Altiplano, the high altitude area, and the stuff at sea level. I mean, chickens will not breed in Puno. You can have chickens and they'll lay eggs, but you can't get chicks. So you got to get your chicks that get brought up from Arequipa. Arequipa is at about 7,000 feet. And so there's chicken raising chicken, you know, people have chickens. And then they send the chickens already alive up to the Altiplano so that you can have eggs. And generally speaking, like a standard breakfast is you get barley and you toast it and it pops like popcorn. And then you grind it up and you add some hot milk or half canned milk with water. And you toast it and that's what cooks it. If you try to boil barley and eat it as a boiled barley, it doesn't cook.
I'll be damned.
I mean, living at high altitude is a whole different trip.
So I got to ask, have you ever done the thing where with the lime rock and the coca leaf in order to facilitate oxygen uptake?
Well, I didn't do it for oxygen uptake, but yeah, I've done it.
I mean, that's why the locals developed it oh so many thousands of years ago, because of the high altitude.
That's kind of a misnomer, too. Down here on the coast, we smoke dope up in the Altiplano. They chew coca leaves. It does have an effect to reduce the symptoms of altitude sickness, but it really doesn't do anything for your red blood cells. It just makes you not as uncomfortable with the altitude sickness. And it's a nice little mild buzz, but you can get a hell of a lot up drinking beer than you can chewing coca leaves. And I don't care how many coca leaves you want to chew. You just can't chew enough of them to be incapacitated.
No, that took white folks coming along and processing the hell out of them.
Yeah. Well, now, if you just chew coca the lime, you'll get some effect. And you go to any hotel up in the Andes and in the breakfast bar, restaurant, anything else, you'll have coca tea on the menu, which is just simply a tea made from the coca leaves. And you do not get near as much of the active ingredient as when you mix it with the lime. Now, the lime basically is wood ash. And wood ash in your mouth, you know, tends to create sores and cause your teeth to have problems and all kinds of other things. So most people will just chew the coca leaf. Now, the hardcore users will take the ash or limestone, if they can get it, wrap it in a pepper leaf, and then wrap the coca leaves around that and put it in a wad and poke it into their cheek and let it precipitate out over time. A lot of people just have their little bag of coca leaves and throw a wad in and chew them like chewing gum. And when it's used up, it gets spat out and you put another wad in. It's sort of like the betel nut out in the Pacific. If you just chew straight betel nut, you will get some effect. If you put the lime with it, which is burnt corals, and wrap that in the pepper leaf and wad it up, you'll get more of the active ingredient out of the betel nut than just chewing the betel nut plain. And no, I'm not a heavy-duty drug user. I've just used illegal drugs wherever I've been, as long as they're a natural drug, not a processed. I've never done cocaine or heroin or any of those.
Well, fascinating. Yeah, Ron and Raleigh just said, you can't get chicks? I guess you get your chicks. I guess you get your chicks on Route 66. Oh, just bad, bad, bad.
Take a cowbell away from him for that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a negative ring. Well, enjoy the dinner. The prime rib sounds fantastic.
Well, I used to do them in a salt pack Dutch oven, and
oh yeah, where you
mix
where you mix the salt with the egg white and form a crust around it, and yeah.
Well, no, you put about a half inch, 3/4 inch of rock salt in the bottom of the Dutch oven. You put the prime rib in. You fill the Dutch oven with the rock salt, and then put the lid on, and then coals on the bottom, coals on the top for an indeterminate period of time. And if you hit it right, you take it out, and it's just beautiful, a thin crust of medium to well on the outside that's about 1/8 inch thick, and the rest of it is just solid, rare, medium rare, all the way through.
Beautiful.
It takes a hell of a long time, but it's just fantastic. But I've done like 5 of them that way, and only one of them did I hit it right? Generally, I've ended up getting them overcooked, which is a sacrilege for a prime rib. To me, they've got to be...
Yeah, I don't think I could take the risk.
It's an expensive piece of meat to screw with. I even went so far as to take my die grinder and cut a little groove in the Dutch oven to where I could slip in the probe to the external thermometer so I could monitor the temperature of the prime rib inside the Dutch oven. And I still screwed up one of them. It's so damn difficult to do. I've given up on it. I'd rather do it in the rotisserie now and be able to stab a thermometer in, check it, and stop cooking it when it gets to about 118, 120, and just leave it turning on the rotisserie for another 15, 20 minutes. And the center will come up to about 138, 140, and then pull it off and slice it and eat it.
Yeah, a lot of years ago, we used to do... we'd get a whole eye of round because it's a little bit smaller and more manageable.
Yeah.
And that's where I learned to do the egg white and salt paste, and you encase it in that and just bake it on a baking roasted it, you know, put it in the oven on a baking sheet, and then when you're done, you just knock the crust away. And it works nicely. You can do this. You can do that same thing with like a whole plank of salmon.
Well, no, when I've done it in the Dutch oven, just in rock salt, when you get all done, you just lift the roast out, and it's a crust of salt all the way around it. You just break it off, and the meat's not salty at all. I mean, it hasn't...
Oh, no, the salt,
I mean,
the salt doesn't
salt,
get there.
But it's... doesn't go into the meat because the juices are coming out and get absorbed by the salt. And then what do you do with this, all this salt? Well, you wait for it to freeze and sprinkle it on your driveway and melt the ice. So that's how I get rid of the salt.
Well, y'all have a lovely dinner, Roger. It sounds like it's going to be delicious and a lovely time with family. And I presume we'll hear from you again before you take off for Peru. But if we don't, safe travels and lots of tourism photos, please.
Well, actually, you might be hearing from me while I'm there, because a lot of the time I'm just going to be sitting at her cousin runs a bed and breakfast, and that's where we stay when we're there, and has Wi-Fi and all the rest of it. And I'm not sure whether my tablet can handle the Skype thing, but I know that I can listen to you while I'm down there, so it might just be chat room. But I just, you know, sit by the pool and read a book and listen to the horn, and I'll be back on the East Coast time down in Lima, because it's
right,
the Eastern time zone, as opposed to out here on the 3-hour earlier West Coast. So you won't lose me. I'll still be around somewhere, but anyhow, you folks have a good day. I'm going to check out and go inside and be sociable with the family.
Sounds
good,
Roger.
So have a good one.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Catch you later.
All right, later. And that's Roger up in Eugene. Let's see. Gary joined in. Hey, Gary.
How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing a little bit better today. We buried my neighbor on Tuesday.
Oh.
Excuse me, Wednesday, so yesterday. So she had a stroke and everything. So she was 83 years old, so, or 84 years old.
Well, you're a good neighbor for checking in on her. A lot of people were impressed with that last week.
Okay. Yeah, that's no problem. So.
So y'all just took it.
Well, I got,
yeah, go ahead, Sparky.
I got my chores done while you're talking to Roger. Got the turkey in, got bread. Grady fed and checked on the rolls above the fireplace. They're looking really good. Now Judy's got the rest of the kitchen duty. Mashed potatoes and the big green beans. And she can heat up if we want.
Well, you'll get a kick out of this. I just got a screen cap from Shorty in L.A. Shorty says, ABC 7 News caught my eye. I just saw a sign from the 14 freeway. At the top of the sign, it reads Mojave, and underneath it, it says Los Angeles. It's blurry. I'm from Chicago, so I'm loving this. Wait for it now. The sign is fuzzy because the foreground is nothing but snow. Real pretty snow. I wasn't expecting to see that on the news. Shorty says, I've done seeing it all now.
Well, these storms in California can be weird. And they're even getting weirder.
Well, and probably more so going forward, you know, climate change.
I mean, after last week, you had that false alarm with PG&E. I was thinking, boy, this got to end soon. People are getting pissed off. So anyway, it's over now. I mean, the wind that was the other night was worse than anything that we had during the PG&E shutdown. Both of them.
God, it'll be, yeah, hopefully there's no more of that. Now we move into the phase where, you know, over here with our rickety, antiquated coal-fried grid, we're at risk. And I recently found out I have a new thing to work on doing, and I'm looking forward to it like a trip to the dentist without Novocaine. I have to replace the it'll be a wee thing. It'll be Agnes and me. Have to replace the wick in the kerosene heater. And I've had people tell me that by the time you get to the point where you realize that you're entirely frustrated and pissed off. That you would have done just as well just to go and buy a new kerosene heater. But that's not really a possibility. So, no, I had a buddy once who went trying to do that and wound up kicking the kerosene heater and all its component pieces out of his house. He got so goddamn angry.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I need to find somebody who's handy at doing that. But that's going to be fun.
You know, handy people back there?
It's not that there aren't. It's a matter of finding them.
Yeah, you don't have a local Craigslist, do you?
Not really. we've got more like Craig's back of the matchbook cover.
Because I've used Craigslist for yard sales, and instead of advertising in the newspaper and just put signs on the highway, and we get lots of people. People sell stuff on it all the time. We're in the Reading area, so it lists us at Red Bluff if you want to sell anything. You look up the Reading Craigslist and it'll show. We're the big towns.
Yeah. I just saw an update that said the Cowboys are trying to rally, but...
No, they lost.
Nah, it's over. Yeah, so much for that.
I was watching it while you were talking. Started talking. I watched the end of it. Jerry Jones got up out of his seat in the box. It looked like pissed off person to head down to the locker room.
Yeah, I'd say Jason. What's his name? Jason Garrett's out of a job.
Well, there've been news leaks on who's going to finish out the season. Well. no sense in firing him now. Let him finish the damn season.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid the 49ers do really, really, really good this year. I mean, keep winning out, go to the Super Bowl or anything. I'm afraid we're going to lose our defensive coordinator.
Oh, somebody, yeah, hire him away for a head coaching job?
Yeah. He'll certainly be on the list after what he's done with the 49er defense this year with all the players he's got, too. I mean, did you watch that game, Monday night game?
I saw parts of it. I saw the highlight reel.
Oh, man. I mean, Sunday night game. They just did a number on Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, no. Green Bay looked awful. No, I did watch the game. It wasn't clips. Yeah. It all runs together. But, yeah, Green Bay just looked horrible. And it's kind of weird because Green Bay went out to San Diego, and San Diego made them look terrible. And then they come back to the West Coast, and San Francisco does a number on them.
What is the Chargers and the 49ers have in common?
The Pacific time zone.
Bosa brothers.
Ah, okay. I thought maybe it just screwed with Green Bay to, you know, go out and lose those 3 hours.
I'm sure Aaron Rodgers got really tired of looking at Bosa coming at him.
Well, that's true. I mean, it was like the Green Bay's offensive line looked horrible.
I mean, Eric Armstead slammed him a few times. Buckner got to him. Fred Warner caused that first fumble. I mean, they were just beating up on him. I was loving it. I couldn't believe it. This weekend was going to be the game of the week, man, between them and the Ravens.
Yeah, that should.
Yeah, I was watching the Bears game today. That was being a Bears fan, and Detroit had a rookie quarterback that's never played a down in the NFL. His first pass was a 75-yard touchdown pass.
Yeah, because what's his name? Matthew, is out, hurt.
Yeah, and the back up's out. So he's the third stringer that played today.
Hey, the Mountaineers won the Cancun Invitational last night. Basketball, that's a good sign. They're 6-0. Maybe the basketball season will be a little bit more watchable than what the football season's been.
Yeah, if you can catch all the games.
Yeah, because the Mountaineers have to win both of their two remaining games even to get bowl eligible, and it's a pretty tall order.
What do you think about that quarterback from LSU?
He looks awesome. And of course, he's older and more mature than most college quarterbacks, because he played an entire regulation career and then got an extra year of a couple extra years of eligibility somehow by transferring to LSU. He's solid.
Yeah, there's some way they work that stuff now.
Yeah, what's his name? Barrow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of pissed at Nick Saban for having Tua in there and letting that happen to his hip. Because I don't know. Maybe the second stringer will prove to be a world beater, but it's not encouraging. Well, I tell you what, it's been a nice little discussion. I think I'm going to knock off an hour early or so and let folks get back to their Thanksgiving evening and whatever folks are up to. Just a reminder, And by the way, thanks for letting me interrupt your Thanksgiving for this, Sparky. I appreciate it. I really, really do.
It was no big deal. I mean, I had my day all planned out.
Well, thank you. Thank you just the same. Just a program reminder. We'll be doing Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. And I haven't heard yet whether or not I'm going to be filling in for Mike on Progressive Voices yet. I'll know that probably by, I'm almost certain to know that by airtime. And I'll advise accordingly. So happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I hope you've had a lovely day. As the punchline to the old joke says, come tomorrow, well, coffee breaks over, back on our heads. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to our subscribers. And thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you so very much. Thanks to all of you for sharing your precious finite time engaging in this decade and a half plus long conversation. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room and over on over in the at the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.